Jeremy here at Adistana again, and this is us into the third full day of the Anagarika Convention here at Adistana. So it's quite an historic event. It's the first time within Sri Ratna we've had a convention get together for the Anagarikas within the order. And this was something that Bhante suggested some time back. I think, in fact, it goes probably further back, but my first communication with Bhante about it was over a year ago when we had just signed the contract, I think, for Coddington Court, which has become Adistana. And he was very pleased that we'd found the place, and we were just chatting, he and I, about the kind of things we might do here at Adistana. And Bhante said, Sangharaksha said, well, one thing you could do is host a convention for the Anagarikas. And I said, oh, well, you could do, yeah. Would that be a mixed one, do you think, Bhante? And he said, oh, yes, of course it would be mixed. So that he suggested that we do that. So then at some point, Damodena and Manjivadra became involved with me in terms of thinking through what we might do and contacting all the Anagarikas that there are in the order. So, I mean, obviously, we know... Well, it's interesting. Maybe I'll actually just pass over to Damodena and just say... Well, there's a couple of questions I'd like to ask you, Damodena. So, first of all, it might just be helpful for people listening to this if you could just tell us what an Anagarika is. Just roughly.
An Anagarika is someone who practices brahmacharya or celibacy, and probably has done that for a while, and then decides to take that as a vow publicly. So it's an intensification of the third precept. It's interesting that the third precept for both Anagarikas and non-Anagarikas is stillness, simplicity, and contentment.
In its positive formulation.
In its other formulation, we take the Abrahmacharya precept. So, yeah, there's a focus on celibacy and chastity, but also there's, I guess, the ideal of homelessness, not that we're homeless, but a freedom from entanglements, a freedom from relationships, a freedom to be a full-time practitioner.
A full-time practitioner in terms of the intensification of that particular precept.
Yeah, and to be available. I see it personally as, I think the freedom aspect is very important to me, that I'm free. It's not that I don't have friends and I've had family that I've even looked after, but I'm free to respond to people when and wherever, however. So it's a kind of amplification for me of metta and compassion and freedom in my own life and freedom to respond.
Yeah, thank you. I mean, you actually conducted the puja in which I became an Anagarika myself, Damodena, and I remember you saying at that point that you had the impression, so that was 11 years ago, and I remember you saying before the puja that you had the impression that some people were quite surprised that I, Parami, had decided to become an Anagarika, but that knowing you weren't surprised. And I think what I took from that, and when we were talking about it afterwards, was for me there's a very strong connection between becoming an Anagarika and pursuing the Bodhisattva ideal.
Yes, very much, yeah.
Is that the kind of thing you mean when you say about availability and freedom?
Yeah, free to be there for people when they need you in whatever way. And for you, free to travel a lot, isn't it, as well?
Yeah.
You're not kind of worried about leaving a pet or a relationship or even for your family member, elder family member behind you, just free to go and do whatever.
Yeah, well, it's an interesting one about family members, isn't it? Because I think sometimes people think if you become an Anagarika, you cut off from your family or people that you have maybe more of a familiar relationship with. But that hasn't been the case for quite a few of the Anagarikas, has it?
No, I think there's, in a way, perhaps a greater freedom to respond with love and kindness. Manjivadra, for example, is looking after his ageing dad. I talked to Bhante about that the other day, and he said, well, he's an only child, and that's quite appropriate as an Anagarika, that that's what he does for the time being.
Yeah, thanks. Yeah, so we've come together, the 26 of us, I think, when Manjivadra arrives.
26, yes. And I think there are 51 or 52 Anagarikas worldwide.
So we've got 50%.
We've got about 50%. Yeah. And we've got men and women.
excuse me.
We've got people from Scotland, England, Germany, Holland, Russia. And then, of course, there are Anagarikas in India and Australasia and other Anagarikas in mainland Europe and UK. Not here for various reasons. But
and two new Anagarikas just a couple of months ago in Mexico.
In Mexico. Yes.
Dai Chandra.
So it's a worldwide, a worldwide phenomenon.
So I guess maybe there might be a concern, maybe within the Anagarikas, maybe say other people who are not Anagarikas thinking, well, why do you want to get together? You know, aren't you just order members? And I think, if I'm right, you weren't sure yourself initially, were you?
Yes, because I don't see it as a group thing. It's very much an individual choice that you take when you feel that's what you want to do for internal reasons, as it were. So, yeah, I wasn't sure what would be the benefit, as it were, coming together. And then I sat in the shrine room on the first day, and I had a very strong response to being with people. Everyone else has got a gold case on, so that you kind of know that people share your experience of practice. And that seems to be the case for some other people. And then we've got the opportunity, it's a convention, so we're not on retreat, as it were. We're meditating, double meditation in the morning, puja in the afternoon, evening practice, but we decided that it would be helpful to share our experience in groups and in the big group about aspects of practice. So yesterday we looked at lifestyle. We looked at simplicity, how many possessions we've got. We just shared our experience, whether we own property or don't own property. It's just quite interesting that there's a common sense of practice and intensification of that precept, but they're actually all quite different.
We were in small groups for that discussion, weren't we? And I was in a group with somebody who lives on their own, somebody else, myself in a community, somebody else in a community, somebody who lives with a very good friend, but who's not in the order, somebody who lives with two other order members, and they don't call themselves a community, but they actually, when we talked about how they live together, it sounded very harmonious,
and that they
eat together and they shop for each other, and they actually, what the person said, which was quite interesting, quite touching, was she said, we just look out for each other. So, that was interesting, because I think sometimes this particular person was saying she's got an idea of what the ideal Anagarika would look like, and she didn't look like that, She wasn't living how she thought the ideal Anagarika should live, so for me, that's been quite an interesting part of the exploration, just seeing, well, it's not to do with a kind of form of something. A lot of it's attitude, isn't it? And a desire to intensify the simplicity.
Yeah, and I talked to Bante before the convention began, and I said probably lifestyle is an issue which would arise, and simplicity of lifestyle, etc. And I gave him a couple of examples that people had written in that they wanted to discuss. One of the things he said was, often people want, people think too black and white terms and want things pinned down too much. And, though, of course, one wants to be continually deepening one's practice, it's not about lots of little rules or extra rules. I mean, we're following a kind of Anagarika Dhammapala example, following the 10 precepts. We've intensified one precept, and from that, we hope that, we do simplify our lives. But friendship is obviously very important as an Anagarika. Companionship, spiritual companionship.
Well, that came out very strongly last night in the two personal sharings. So in the evenings we've been having a couple of people just talk about why they became an Anagarika, what it means for them. And both of last night's, I was very struck by how both of those women talked about the important place of friendship in their life. How, obviously, as an Anagarika, obviously as an order member, as a Dhammachari, one's developing a strong sense of individuality. But that individuality doesn't work against connectedness. So, interesting kind of areas of exploration, I think.
I think we will explore, I don't know if it's today or tomorrow, we're going to explore what supports our practices on the characters. And again, I'm sure that will be quite varied. Yeah. Get quite varied. Yeah. So we're sharing our experience, aren't we? Sharing our stories and learning more about the practice and inspiring each other.
Yeah, which is great. Somebody in the small group I was in yesterday, there was a couple of things that came out of that small group for me that were quite interesting. So when was somebody talking about how before she became an anagarika, she'd been practicing brahmacharya, she'd been practicing celibacy for quite a few years. As she puts it, initially not by choice, but then by choice. So she'd made a very conscious decision at some point, a few years before she became an anagarika. And so partly she thought, why bother becoming an anagarika? Because I'm doing that anyway. But her experience was as soon as she put the gold case in, kind of like the power of the ritual gave her a strength.
Yeah,
that struck me as quite interesting. And the other thing that somebody else in the small group said was that sometimes she takes something into her chapter, which is an issue for her, and people just kind of don't really understand why it's an issue. And it's not around the sexuality, it was more around simplicity of wisdom.
Yeah, yeah.
Where she was talking about maybe having bought something that she didn't really need. And kind of saying in her chapter, oh, I've just bought this particular thing, and everybody kind of going,
great.
Yeah. And, you know, and somebody said to her on one occasion, gosh, is that all you've bought recently? You know, so you know, something about maybe just being able to share that has.
Yeah, and one of the things that was shared in my group was, I suppose, highlights the difference between people. We were talking about possessions and decluttering and letting things go, that one person said they were given lots of clothes. And they've just put them in their wardrobe and they've got far too much and they need to just declutter it and get rid of a lot of it. And someone else said, oh, I'm really not interested in clothes at all. I've only got two pairs of trousers and a couple of woolies. So people are very, very different in you know, what their working edge is, I guess.
Yeah, we also had quite an interesting discussion about working in the world and how one does that as a, as a Buddhist, actually.
Mm.
But also specifically whether it makes a difference doing it as an anagarika. So one person in our group has got quite a high powered job in the recovery field. So she was talking about the fact that she wears her kesa at quite a lot of events in her work. And, you know, she put it, the Church of Scotland minister turns up with his dog collar, so she wears her kesa. But people, of course, asked why she'd changed from having a white kesa to a gold kesa. So she said she's been quite honest and said, well, you know, I'm living more, trying to live a simpler life. And so we had a really interesting discussion about, well, how can you do that in the world? And as you said before, like following the example of Dhammapala Anagarika, Anagarika Dhammapala, where you're in the world. It's not that becoming an Anagarika, in his case, or in the case of many of us, means up the mountain, closed door. I mean, that might be the case for some people, that's
people.
How they choose to practice.
Yeah, you know, he was free to travel and spread the Dharma, wasn't he, without the restrictions of monastic rules. You know, he could handle money, he could travel how he wished, and he took the 10 precepts. So he is very much an inspiration for Bhante, for the Anagarikas in our order. He said that again to me on Sunday, but that's that's his kind of touchstone, I guess, is his Anagarika's life.
Mm-hmm. I have friends in another Buddhist movement, and they talk very much, a friend from the Amida Trust, actually, quite a lot of people know, and they talk about being monastics in the world. Those some of them don't practice celibacy, some of them are married, but the ones who have chosen to practice celibacy, they talk very much about the monastery with no walls, which I quite like, actually, as a kind of a way of thinking about it, because obviously, you know, very much in the world on planes and boats and trains.
Yeah, I guess we're going to come on to talking about, aren't we, more about our effect to the wider order in the world. And I guess one of the things that was mentioned in the early check-in, the first check-in by someone, was he thought it was very, very important that anagarikas were happy. were happy with that choice.
Yeah.
That it wasn't a choice. It's a free choice, so there may be a working edge, but it's not... it doesn't give rise to lots and lots of tension and trouble and, you know, worry. And and he said if it does lead to lots of conflict in one's life, then probably best to kind of give it up for a while. Or, you know, if you've tried working with that for a while. So I think maybe we just kind of get on with our lives, and we've been doing, you know, I've been around Gareth for a long time, so I don't, in some ways I don't really think about it a lot, but I guess it does model something, you know, to others without making a big deal about that, that you can be single and free and very, very happy and not have, not be special to someone, you know.
Yeah. Special
to lots of people.
Yeah.
So I think that it's quite unusual in our culture, isn't it? So focused on the romantic ideal, I guess. So, you know, there's another lifestyle, there's another way of living which can be a very happy life.
Yeah, no, I agree with that. I think it's really important to offer alternatives. Mm. You know, not necessarily saying everybody should do that, because of course it's not I mean, it's not everybody's cup of tea.
No,
and neither should it be, really. It's some sort of very particular practice, isn't it? But I think for me it's quite important as well. There's a sort of certain visibility aspect to it that people can see, well, there are alternatives, you know, even if it's a temporary alternative to practice celibacy. And didn't Banty say somewhere that we're all on a spectrum anyway?
Yes, yes.
And he thought nobody was practicing celibacy all the time.
No.
Perhaps in thought, perhaps, you know. And certainly nobody was having sex all the time.
Yeah,
and that we're somewhere on a spectrum.
Yeah. And that we're just trying to, you know, turn towards a freer, more individual experience in life, through our practice rather than individual. I thought it was interesting last night, that both the speakers last night said that I think they were, they might have been in relationships at the time, or still, you know, kind of having relationships. But they both heard people talk about their experience of being anagarikas on different occasions, different people. So I guess that, you know, that alternative was just kind of unfolded to them, and it was obviously a positive, happy alternative. And it had an effect on both of them, it touched both of them, didn't it? So,
someday.
Oh, yeah, well, someday.
Sow the seed,
which was obviously there, and it just gave them an opportunity to follow that through, you know, that it was possible.
Great. Well, thank you very much. I think it's, you know, it's good just to let people know a bit what we do. I think sometimes people, there can be almost a little bit of a kind of mystique or something around being around Gareth. Or, almost on the contrary, people a little bit like, well, why bother with that, you know, it seems. And I remember when I first became an anagarika, there was a shortish period, but where I felt very exposed wearing the gold case on.
Yeah, yeah.
And there's sort of a bit like, you know, oh God, are they going to ask me why I'm doing it? And then actually I don't really know, you know, you don't notice it after a while doing it. Anyway,
I have
had
someone come up to me in the RBC some years ago and ask me whether I'm wearing a gold case because I was enlightened.
And you said?
And I said, well, we're all on the spectrum. No, I explained what it meant.
Yeah.
But I guess it can be misunderstood.
Yeah, that's right. And I think when you see, you've used seeing people in white cases, I guess that's one of the things sometimes people are a bit unsure about, having an anagarika, you know, ordination. Well, it's not an ordination,
but
taking that, an element, taking that or that particular vow within the order. I think sometimes people are unsure about whether it separates us out in a certain way, makes people look at you differently or whatever, but I guess it's for me it's a practice, and to wear a gold case is part of that practice.
Yeah.
I mean, interestingly, quite a few people say the sex isn't an issue for them, it's more to do with simplicity of lifestyle, and I understand that, but actually it isn't still an issue in a great big way, but I'm still quite often sexually attracted to people. So for me, it's quite a strong practice to be wearing the gold case.
Yeah,
because it says I'm not available. Maybe they probably aren't interested in anything, but, you know, just in case.
And you don't want to get into a relationship.
Exactly.
I have fallen in love a couple of times since I've been with Gareth, but I see it as a kind of, sort of more about fascination, you know, the rite of fascination, kind of interested in someone, and, you know, I don't want to follow it through in any way, but,
Yeah, similarly, that isn't where I want to put my energy. But, you know, it doesn't mean that I don't notice sometimes.
Yeah.
And for me, it's not just the external thing of somebody else knowing I'm an anagarika, but for me to know I'm an anagarika, and I've taken that particular vow, and I want to follow that through.
Yeah.
So it kind of just nips something in the bud,
it does.
As it were. So
allows something else to blossom.
Oh, very nice. I think we should finish there. That's a nice point. Thanks very much, Damodena. Pardon me again. I'm down in Colwall now, where I've dropping Kula Danny off at the railway station, because unfortunately for us, she's got to go home up to Glasgow for work. But you've had a few days here
at the
Anagarika convention, so I did a wee chat with you during the Women's Order weekend. We heard you then, so you stayed in since then and participated in this historic fest of the Anagarika convention. So this morning I did talk a bit to Dama Dinna. We had a wee chat and I asked her a bit about, you know, what was an Anagarika and things like that. So I think I'm right in saying you're our newest Anagarika
here at this convention. That there's others in Mexico and other places that have been done since then. Yeah.
So how
I'm
did
only
you find
4 months?
You're 4 months in Anagarika. So what drove you? What made you? What encouraged you to take such a step?
I suppose there's a number of different strands. One very strong strand is seeing through my own personal romantic myth. You know, just seeing that there's no way on earth it could ever provide for me what I was looking for from it. Mm. And actually, that was impeding me, well, on one level, sort of logically, it was impeding me from appreciating what I did have in my life. And my life is very beautiful and full of really strong and good relationships in my chapter, in my friends, and in my work in the recovery movement. So that was one strand. And I have to say, the other things absolutely feel spiritual, really. Mm. That I've had a long renunciant tendency in my character anyway, and it just felt freedom. Mm. You know, I've always sought freedom from addiction in myself, freedom from other conditions, freedom from the conventional expectations. And and that seems to arise as a fruit of practice. And I'm delighted by it. So in a sense, it's easy in some senses to be an Anagarika for me. Sex is not a question. It's just a relief to have it gone. And it's just like, yay, thank goodness I can get on and really enjoy these people without any other dynamic going on. And it's very at ease for me. But in public life, because I do a lot of work in public, in the whole population, there's something significant also about people being aware that when I'm speaking, I'm not just speaking pragmatically. I'm bringing a different perspective. And it isn't a clunky, and now I will interpret the Dharma for you. It's none of that. It's more an awareness that there's a bigger context and that that's appreciated. And somehow that's held easier in the public consciousness, being an Anagarika.
So people that you work with, for example, because you work in quite a demanding job, and you've got a team and you're working also with people in recovery. Yeah. They know you to be an Anagarika.
Yes,
they know what that means.
It's very interesting. Yes, they do. Yes, they do. It was because I'm the head of this national organisation, it was a press release issue when I became an Anagarika.
So actually, I saw that.
It was a press release issue, so like, how are we going to put this out? And it wasn't to the press, but we have our own media.
Yeah, you sent me a copy.
It was really funny. And how do we say that? And it is significant for people, because it's also as a result of my recovery from addiction that I keep growing in this spiritual direction. So it's significant for people to know that there are different ways of doing life. And it's interesting in terms of, you'll do Google Analytics. So those of you who are techie geeks will now know that we don't do outcomes. We do Google Analytics to see how sticky a message is or how big my... That message bounced. That photograph of me with the Anagarika, with the gold case, I bounced all over Facebook, bounced all over the world. And I get met by people who knew me in my previous incarnation years ago, running criminal justice services on the probation board, saying, "What's that lady with the hair or the no hair? She became a nun." So I'm going, "Yes, how is she?" So it is significant. And it's like returning something to public life, which is the altruistic dimension. You know, and after all of these concerns, which are basic integrity concerns, like with MPs, expenses, journalists, hacking, they're really basic integrity questions in public life.
Ethical questions,
absolute
moral questions.
Moral and ethical questions. And it's lovely to be in a setting where people go, yeah, of course. you know, because one of the things I won't do is sell anybody's stuff for them. Do you know what I mean? And I won't go to conferences where they're charging people to hear me speak. Mm. Because I have a fundamental ethical position that I'm already paid for. The Scottish Government has paid for me. And that's free.
Sorry to interrupt you, sweetheart. Do you see that as connected with the practice of being a nanny girl?
Absolutely, absolutely. Yeah. I'm free. Mm. That's the question.
You come free.
I am free. My time is already paid for. Yeah. I'm well supported, and therefore it's free. And so everything I do is free. So it's been one of the principles of the organisation I work in public life, is that we give it away for free as part of the generosity of recovery. I'm so grateful to be in recovery. I'm so grateful to be an order member, and I'm so grateful to be an Anna Carica.
Mm.
Everything else is free.
Fantastic. That's very moving. So one question occurs to me, actually, it's just occurring to me listening to you. When you were ordained 5 years ago,
yeah,
you were given the name Kuladarani, which you've changed your name formally, officially, legally.
Yeah.
You are Kuladarani, Dharmacharani Kuladarani. So as I understand that name, it means...
She who sustains the community.
So
towards enlightenment is the wee brackets.
Okay, so she who sustains the community,
yeah,
brackets towards enlightenment. I don't know, it's just occurring to me as we're talking that that's quite interesting alongside the practice being an anagarika. Do you see them as connected?
Absolutely, absolutely. It's that more free to be unimpededly with my tribes. I mean, I really call them the tribes, because Kula can be in tribes, it's tribe, with the tribes. And that, and people feel that authenticity of connection. They're not expecting to be special to me, or, you know, not special as in exclusive, but that the love is unimpeded and present for everyone. And it's lovely, particularly in my world, which is the world of work I'm talking about here, which can be so rent with division and conflict.
Sure.
My actual living experience is I love, literally love, every single group in the world. You know, I stand up and go, I love drug workers. I love addicts performing. I love people in recovery. I love government officials. I find MSPs hilarious.
Maybe we shouldn't go there. This is
delightful,
public.
But delightful. Yeah. Do you know what I mean? Yeah. In the sense of, but seeing it all, and it's not seeing them all in their intentions and what they're bringing, because they don't come to the world. None of them come to the world wanting to do harm. Do you know what I mean? And I really see that and witness that.
Sure. So just before we finish, because I've only got a couple of minutes left on the audio boo, and you've got to go off. Anyway, so coming together with other anagarikas, has that felt like a worthwhile thing?
Lovely. There was something quite powerful about sitting in the shrine room full with gold cases. I felt it on a visceral, bodily level. Of it's that affirmation as well.
Of a particular practice.
And it is that, I love being with the order in general. I love it. But this is the first time I've been with anagarikas, and I just saw that, that's going to be really, really helpful. And yes, I would do it again. I would make an effort to do it again. And
fantastic. Yeah. Well, thanks very much, and safe home.
Thank you.